Welcome, everyone. I'm Jeffrey Goodman, Director of Marketing and Development for the YMCA of Northwest Louisiana, and we're here at 318 Latino Studios for Shreveport-Bossier, my city, my community, my home. And can't wait to have today's discussion. Our guest is Rolanda Hewitt.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks for being here.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Of course. Well, I can't wait to talk to you. I've got some questions for you.
Okay.
Anything I get wrong, please correct me.
I will.
So I believe this is right. You're a third grade math and science teacher at University Elementary School.
Yes.
In your career, you've received numerous awards for your work, including Teacher of the Year twice.
Three times.
Teacher of the Year three times. Mm-hmm. And Teacher of the District in Caddo Parish.
Yes, for elementary ed. Yeah.
Amazing. So I'm so excited to have you, not only because of the wealth of experience you bring to today's discussion, but because, I'm a little embarrassed to say this, but it's true, but because you're our very first public elementary school educator in 90 plus episodes.
Okay.
So let's start here today. Teaching school's one of the most important careers one can take on, mm-hmm. but also one of the more challenging. My first question for you is, what are some of the things you personally do to stay resilient and keep from burning out?
Well, you get a new group of kids every year. So this year could be, you know, this type of group. The next year could be a totally different type of group. So that's one thing to look forward to. What is the new year going to bring me? Also, just the reward of them learning. The reward of them learning and progressing and figuring out things for themselves, and the light bulb pops on, and you get to experience that. And it's just a love for seeing that. Also, I just love my job. It is stressful. It is hard because teachers, you know, we were sitting in a workshop one day, and it's six of us that teaches third grade there. And so I start writing this list out. They're just shop talking. And I'm starting to write this list off. And I'm like, okay, we got a new job now. We're nurses, we're doctors, you know, and I'm starting to rattle off all these things. And I'm letting my friends look. And they're like, oh, no, add this. We have to be counselor. Yeah. And someone else adds in. So we have to be a lot of things. So it is stressful. And you're tired all the time, but the reward is watching the kids when they learn something new or learn something different or learn another way of doing something. So it's very rewarding.
Is there any kind of like self-care that you particularly do that's kind of your secret sauce?
I probably need to get better at that. Sometimes people look at us, our profession, and go, you guys get breaks all throughout the year. You guys get, you know, a summer or whatever. And I'm like, you remember that teacher you had in school that was a little bit crazy, just a little bit off a little bit? That's where we all could be. It literally could be there because you have so many stressors on you, whether it's the state wants this now or the district wants this. And, you know, then your school needs this, then parents need that. It's so many different things that you are required to do and that's pulling on you. It just gets a little hard and you lose yourself. So I guess teachers have different ways of dealing with it. Some teachers are like, you know what? When I'm breaking, I'm breaking. That's it. When I'm out this week, I'm going to travel. And then you have those teachers that's, oh, when I'm out this week, I'm going to catch up on all these things that I should have done with school, which is not really giving you a break. So everyone is different. It gets really hard to do that. So for me, I don't break a whole lot. I have to force myself to break and just have that downtime to where it's like certain days during my break, I'm not going to do anything related to school. Or like on Fridays when I get home, that's my day to kind of not do anything. I'm exhausted anyways, but I don't grade papers. I don't do anything. And then I'll do a little bit on Saturday and then Sunday, and then we go back to school again. So everybody's different, but I don't break a whole lot. Not as much as I probably should. I like staying on top of it and making sure that the kids get every part of me that, you know, that I can give. And now I have a new student. He's and what we call an ELL student, and he speaks only Spanish. So just when I thought I have now got a grip on some of it, it's like, well, this baby knows stuff. And I only took a class of Spanish. I don't know a lot of Spanish, but I started to convert my lessons into Spanish slides, Spanish study guides, Spanish tests, all of that. And that helps his parents out as well, because their English is limited. So now here we go again with, you know, something new to do. But
adding to the list.
Yeah, yeah. So it's hard to kind of rejuvenate yourself and just kind of, I guess, refresh yourself for the new day or the new whatever. So I struggle with that.
Yeah, understandably.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So my next question for you is just describe for people that don't really understand this, what is it like working in a school post-COVID?
Things have kind of gotten back to normal now. Right after was a little bit stressful. Eventually, the mask mandate was put into place. So, because they're kids, you know, they sneeze, they cough, they touch things. They don't know, they don't understand it. And so you're trying to now start to teach your health teachers now, because you're starting to try to teach more about, you know, the importance of covering your mouth, not with your hand, that kind of thing. A lot of teachers were afraid to go back because, you know, it had affected them in some way. And most times it was not a great outcome for them. So they were afraid. And it's like, you know, why would they make us come back so soon? Why would they do this? Why, you know, it was a lot of whys. And then it was so many questions that different people were asking. And it's like waiting for an answer. And that was just kind of like, well, what am I going to do? Well, what am I supposed to do in my room? Well, they haven't, you know, gotten me all the supplies I need to clean my room. It was a lot of things like that as well. The biggest thing, though, was just, you know, many of us were hoping that the kids came back because they're getting so far behind. We're already behind. And now we're missing a chunk of, you know, the time that we should be in school. And but a lot of them were afraid, and it's like, I'd rather do virtual. I'll just do what I need to do and take care of it virtually. So it was definitely, you know, I wouldn't even say 50-50, but maybe close to that, with teachers being just afraid. And it's like, I don't know if I want the norm back yet. And then those that were like, I'm ready for the norm. I'm tired of being stuck in the house. I'm ready for the kids to come back. As far as looking at it from maybe as parents' point of view, a lot of them were afraid to send their kids back and did not send their kids back. So you did have some classes that were really vacant. And then you had some that were a little bit more full. It seemed like the older they were, the more that the parents would send them, you know, or more parents would send them. And the younger they were, they just kind of kept them at home, which really hurt them because they missed all of those fundamentals. And so you get them and they've missed kindergarten or they've missed first grade. And I get them in third grade and it's like, okay, we already had an issue with the reading level that these kids are getting out of school with. And now we really have a deficit. So, you know.
And now does it feel like it was before COVID?
As far as students being in school and things getting back to normal, yes. As far as deficits, no. I guess the kids that I taught last year, I think that might have been the first class that was maybe kindergarten, and then they missed a chunk of school and maybe even didn't even come in first grade. You can feel it there. You can totally feel it there. So those kids will have to go years before they've graduated from high school. So I don't know how that's going to affect them down the line. The reading is just, it's not good. And it affected, you know, math as well, which are supposed to be our two major subjects. But then just the thinking in science and social studies, just learning history or learning because with science, it's not the same subject matter that you're teaching every year. I might teach these four units, and next year they're immersed into four totally different units that's unrelated. And so just the thinking that goes with that and having missed all of that, you know, it really hurt them a lot. Yeah.
It's interesting. I think a lot of people, even if you have kids or don't have kids, you're not.
And when you think about the struggle before that, there's been so many changes in education with curriculum. Just things put into place that it's like, okay, now we want you guys to do this. Okay, well, now we want you guys to do this. And it's like, well, who's going to at least ask us for our opinion? And that's a big thing that you hear in education, at least from teachers, maybe not all people involved in education. Obviously not, because those that are making the decisions seem to not know what we really think and feel. And it's like, we're the ones on the front line. We're the ones getting these students in who can't read or whatever the case may be. At least ask us, this is probably not what we need. This is what we need. So why would you take this from us when that was working? And we totally get that. It's a changing world. It's a more technological world. We do need to make changes. But the fundamentals were kind of stripped away we feel that it's been stripped away. It was still there, but it was embedded. And it's kind of like if you don't have teachers that are well prepared and trained to understand how to dissect that, then also teachers that are willing to do it. They may even know how to do it, but it's like, that's too much.
And when you say fundamentals, like define
like just teaching them how to read, understanding the more basic components that you need in order to build upon and to grow from. Spelling. Some think that, okay, that's not really important. But it kind of, you know, a lot of teachers are looking at it from a standpoint or stance of, it worked in the past. That's why I know how to spell. That's why I know my sounds. That's why my phonological skills are good. But this kid can't do it. You know why? Because we took all of that away. They don't have to know a noun from a verb from anything anymore. Now, some pieces throughout the years, it seems that they took pieces away and then they kind of ease them back in a little bit. But a lot of it was just kind of broken and scattered. And now you have teachers that, hope I'm not telling all the teacher secrets. You have, and I don't teach reading, but I know reading teachers. And you have teachers that are trying to piece together what they need. They're taking the curriculum that they have, but it's like, these kids need this piece. So now I've got to somehow embed that piece in and almost hide it so that I don't get in trouble for doing it. But my kids progress when I do that versus when I don't. So just not asking the advice of a lot of teachers, I think, is a disservice to the children, because they're overall affected. And even if you don't go with what we're telling you or asking you or requesting from you, even if you don't go with that, at least hear us out. Hear us out to see how many of us are actually feeling the same way. Though it's kind of like, telling doctors to, which are frontline workers as well, and so are the nurses or whatever, but it's kind of like taking away something major that they would need to do their job to save this person. Well, you wouldn't take anything from a doctor or nurse that they need to save this person. Why would you do that to teachers? We're not these uneducated people that don't know anything. I know we're at the bottom of the totem pole when it comes to pay, and it is what it is with that, but that doesn't mean the low pay doesn't mean that we're not given as much as other professions. It's just a disservice to us. It's not right, but
and the people in the trenches know best.
Yes, we know things. Just at least ask, and that you'll hear that so much from teachers. Nobody, I'm not even worried about that. Nobody asks. Nobody cares. Nobody cares what we think. You know, you hear that so much, and I've been at a few schools, and you hear it everywhere you go. Yeah. Sorry, I went so long.
No, it's perfect. So I know the environment created at a school makes a huge difference in teacher retention. Talk to me about this, if you could, and some of the factors that determine whether teachers thrive and remain focused versus factors in the environment at a school that might lead to job dissatisfaction.
Okay. So factors, do you mean like, I mean, specifically?
Like what at a school, just in terms of the environment that the school creates for you, yeah, what at a school like?
Yeah, because they're different. I mean, it depends on where you are. It depends on where you are. If you're at a magnet school, for example, there's a lot, people think, oh, she's in a magnet school, she's fine, she's great, she's got these wonderful, smart kids, and everything's fine. I started out at a magnet school and I loved it. I really did. But you have a lot of stress put on you because it's like, yeah, these kids are smart, but I've got to show growth. How do you show growth in kids that are already at the top of their game? How do I help my school SPS to continue to go higher? So there's a lot
SPS
of...
SPS stands, do you know?
It's school performance score.
Okay, yeah. I didn't know. So.
Yeah, well, every school
okay.
gets a school performance score, okay. and you want yours to be at a certain level or higher, and that helps to determine what letter grade your school gets. So that is stressful in that you don't really have all of these worries about someone coming in and doing something at the schools and all the, because everything's, it appears to be la, 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 but there is a lot of stress with that. Then you have schools that might be more of a Title I school where they're getting some funding to do things, but the amount of work and the amount of things that they need to be able to go back to the beginning and get these babies and kind of grow them and get them, you know, built up or whatever. A lot of people will say, well, they don't have the teachers that they need. We all went to college. We all got the same degree. Now, they may have teachers that, some teachers that maybe these schools didn't want that teacher. And it's like you're cast aside and maybe this school need teachers. And it's like, well, we got to hire this person regardless. That's not always the case, though. That is not always the case. Sometimes it's a case where we don't get the teachers that we need. Sometimes there's there are situations where we don't have the supplies we need. Sometimes there are situations where, you know, you go into this school and it's like, oh, God, this is a bad school. All these kids, it's behavior. And sometimes that does play a role into what you can give to those kids. And I feel bad for those students that are sitting there and trying to learn and trying to get an education because you do have to deal so much with behavior. But behavior kind of spreads out a little bit. It just gets dependent on where you are and the school and the type of school it is, maybe Title I versus magnet, you know, and everything in between. As you go towards the magnet side, the behavior is not so bad because that can get you kicked out. But the further you go on the scale, to maybe more of a Title I school or a school that someone doesn't care about so much, the behavior can be astronomical. It's crazy. And that hurts. I mean, you know, you have, and I can't speak for everyone at every single school, but you have a lot of factors where, okay, we got to figure out how to get the community behind them. If we can get the community to buy into this and to want this and to want more and to want all of these great things, then we've got to reach out to them. We've got to do something to get them in. And not a lot of schools have time for that, or maybe they're not willing to do that or whatever. But I worked with this guy. His name was, I'll just use his first name, Courtney. And we worked in Mansfield together. And he started out as one of our SPED teachers, and then he went on to eventually become our assistant principal, and we were hoping for principal one day for him there. And he eventually got that just in another parish. But that was one of the schools where we were working so hard on behavior and to get the community involved in just things that we were doing at the school and to help us to grow your children, to help this, that, and the other with behavior and all of that. And he had so many great plans, and then he started to get the parents to kind of buy into some of the things he wanted to do, to the point where they were protesting because they wanted him as the principal, because it's like, I've dealt with your child for 3 years and this kid was something to deal with, but you somehow were able to figure out, or he was able to figure out how to build a relationship with that child as well as the family. Because if you don't have the family, you can just kind of hang it up. And that's another big thing that affects us as teachers. And it's an external, you know, issue that we have. And that's with a lot of our parents. They either, I don't know how to do this stuff, or some just seem to not care. You know, a lot of kids being raised by grandparents or even great grandparents that just don't know how to do any of that stuff.
So what was his secret, you think? Like, what did he do so well that enabled him to get the families and the parents involved?
Get on the phone and called them. He got on the phone and called them, and they had to come out and meet with him. And it's like, you know, hey, we got to work with this baby. Tell me what's going on. What can we do together? How can we partnership? This is what I'm seeing. This is what my plans are, but I want to work with you, not against you. And that was the thing, because you would see him in his office often. You would see him on the phone with him often. To, like I said, to the point where they are protesting, because this is who we want. We have a good rapport with this guy. We understand that he wants what's best for our child. So we're willing to do whatever to get him here. But they ended up going with another candidate. But he is flourishing. I want to say he might be in Minden now, somewhere out that way. But yeah, they're like, you know, whatever you did at this school, we need you to come over here and do this. And then at that time I stepped out of the classroom for almost 8 years. I was a master teacher supporting primarily math teachers with, you know, teaching kids. And it was other ones of us, like you had lead teachers for math, lead teachers for science and social studies, lead teachers for ELA. Every single one of us was behind him. It's like, whatever you need. Okay, you haven't dealt that much or worked that much with testing. We got your back. We're going to sit down with you and we're going to go through. This is how this goes. This is how this works. That kind of thing. So he not only had the support of the community, he had the support of the teachers, and we were willing to do whatever we needed to do to make him shine. Make him shine, make our school shine, hopefully make some changes in the school.
Because to you as teachers, just like to the community, it was clear that this person was fully engaged and fully committed.
Absolutely. And you do not find that a lot. A lot of principals just don't have time for that. Or it's like, you know, I have my family after hours. I can't spend time trying to figure out all this stuff with the community. The parents need to do whatever, you know, they need to do at home, you know, but then you have those parents those principals that are like, well, let's see what we need to do to get these parents in. Let's have something up here and we can, you know, have some food items or whatever out, or give away gifts or whatever, and bring them in, whatever way that they can. And once we get them here, then we can sit with them and talk to them. But, you know, principals are from A to Z. Yeah, with just the issues they have or their mindset that they have. Some care too much and spend their last dollar. And then some are more standoffish and it's like, you know, I'm not dealing with that. So it just kind of depends on, you know, the school, kind of depends on the principal, kind of depends on where you are geographically. You know, you may be in a more rural area where everybody knows everybody. You may be in an inner city where nobody really knows anybody or very few know each other. So the dynamics are just vast no matter where you go.
Yeah. No, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Well, talk to me if you could, just if someone said, what's the biggest challenge being an educator today? What would you say to that?
I'm one person. You probably could ask 10 different teachers and get 10 different answers. Some would say it's too much. It's too much on me. You want me to do this, 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 and this. Plus, I've got to take care of these kids. And I've got to try to figure out all the different personalities of the parents. And I've got all this stuff to plan. I'm stressed. That's one of the bigger things. Another thing that you would hear would be, why is it fair that I have this group of children? They are probably some of the lower or lowest babies we have in the school. I'm teaching my heart out. I'm up here at 5:30. I leave at 5:30. But I'm going to be judged or categorized or given a score based upon how these kids perform on a LEAP test. And it's not fair. Of course, the teachers at the LEAP, at the magnet schools are going to have a great rating versus me, whatever. That's not necessarily true because, again, those kids are at the highest of their, you know, at the highest level, and you've still got to show growth. So teachers will complain about that as well. Depending on who the principal is, it could be a situation where I got the principal from Hades. Nothing we do satisfies this person. And you'll hear people say, well, the school, the head of the snake, if you want to say it that way, I hate to say it that way, but the head of the snake, it's that mentality. If you are no good, or if you don't care, or if you whatever, those negative things that goes along with that, your school will also, but yeah, we'll feel that. And we will not ride for you. You know, we're going to do our jobs, but we don't feel the love. And we come to work not looking like we don't feel the love, and therefore it affects us in the classroom. So that's another factor. Yeah. Or another thing. But yeah, there are so many. There's so many. It just depends on the person.
And how do I know we started today with you saying I love my job.
So I do.
How do you find the love to overcome all of those things you just
mentioned? It is all about the kids. I think back, and the reason that I got an education, because I'm a business major. I went to Louisiana Tech. Couple of dogs. but I went to Louisiana Tech and I majored in business and then came home for a little bit, moved to Texas, tried it in the business world, and I just wasn't fulfilled. And so I eventually moved back here, went back to school, got my education certification, and then I started teaching. And I thought about when I was a kid in school, and, you know, it was just very old school. You got whacked in the hand with a ruler, you know, or whatever. If you did something wrong or whatever the case may be back then, I'm kind of old, you know. But I think about the times in school when I didn't know something or didn't understand something or whatever. You were kind of afraid to even open your mouth to say, I don't get it. I don't know. And I lost some pieces along the way, and I had to pick those pieces up later. Now, my grades were pretty steady. They were pretty good along the way, but I had to work for it so hard or go home. And my dad was the person that helped me with math. My mom was more with the reading, you know, that she helped us with. But I always wanted to be to kids what I wanted someone to be to me. I wanted to be fun, but not to a fault. I wanted to be disciplined, but I also wanted my kids to understand when I mean business and it's time to cut that off. I wanted to come up with all of these creative ways that they could figure out how to solve problems. I wanted to have a classroom where I could turn to my neighbor and actually talk to my neighbor and figure something out together with my neighbor. But primarily in elementary school, that just wasn't a thing. It wasn't allowed. And I wanted to be that person that, that teacher that when kids grew up, you know, you're in eighth grade, you're still using my strategies. And I have them to still tell me that. I have students who have now become teachers that have contacted me. One was at my house a couple summers ago. And I just shared everything I had with her. And just being able to give back in that way and have them to have enough respect for me to say, hey, let me reach back to Miss Hewitt. You know, she'll help me. But I just wanted to be that light in their life that I didn't feel that I had. And so that's a big part of why I do what I do, why I got into education in the first place. It's unfortunately I mean, it's unfortunate that there's so many things are surrounding all of that. You know, I just kind of go into my little bat cave with my kids and I do what I do with them. And I'll just handle all of that when I open the doors and release the kids out into the world, which it would be enrichment recess or whatever. But yeah, that's why I do what I do. Even though we get paid almost nothing compared to other professions, still yet you have so many teachers that are they are in it, and we work so many hours. People don't understand how many hours we actually work. We take stuff home to grade. We have to sometimes plan at home, and then you have to kind of figure out, oh, I've got a husband and two kids too. I got to figure this thing out. So, yeah.
Yeah, I love that. So my last formal question, we will come back after that and see if there's anything else you want to talk about. But, and you got into this a little bit, but my question is, how can community members get more involved in helping with the challenges our educators face? And what opportunities do you see that exist for folks to be mentors, tutors, et cetera?
Oh, that would be wonderful. That would be wonderful. I would love to bring the community in. I've been saying that for years. You have so many people that just don't understand education and what it entails. And it's kind of like, you know, it's a twofold one. You want to bring the community in so that kids learn about different, I don't know, different occupations and things like that. And a lot of us do pretty good with that. But then just so that they can understand, you know, especially the ones that really, it's like you're just teaching some kids. I mean, what's the big deal? No, you need to come into our environment. I mean, sometimes it gets scary, especially if you're at a high school or a middle school where anything could happen. And you don't go to your job afraid every day. You know, sometimes it's situations where those that are making the decisions, it's like, just come work here for a week. Just come work with me for a month. I'll supply you with the lesson plans. You just come teach. And let's see how that goes in this environment. I don't know what to do, you know. Just even with our school board, I think sometimes once you've been away or out of the classroom for so long, you forget what it's like to be in there. You think you know, and you think you're making great decisions based on what you think you know. It's changed. You haven't been in the classroom for 10 years, 20 years. These kids are different, very different. So just bringing them in to just test the waters and just kind of, you know, let's have a refresher. Let's try to do some of the things that you're requiring of us. And I'm not saying that it's invalid stuff. It's just a lot. And some people don't quite understand how to maneuver through that. I'm just a workaholic. I'm a workaholic, and not everybody has that kind of time to devote to what they do. I'm also a perfectionist, which, you know, hurts me as well, because I'm going to stick with it until I figure it out or get it right. And some people are like, hey, look, I got to go pick up my kids from dance, you know. But definitely bringing the community in so that more kids hopefully would be more inspired, especially when you have schools where the kids may not have anybody in their families that have ever gone to college or anybody that's like a professional or have their own business or whatever. And just having people to come in and say, hey, look, if I can do it, you can do it. And that's every color in the rainbow. There are always those kids that just feel like there's no hope. And it only takes one person for them to think, you know what? He's right. I can do it. And they start to change. And you can see that. I had one student one time, and this was at a magnet school. You know, he went from this kid who made straight A's and just happy and all of these things. And he started to get really angry and started to change. And so instead of just attacking him, I decided, you know, because it would be like, I'm just going to say Dustin. Let's just say that. Dustin, you need to knock it off, dude. You can't do, you know. And I was like, let me just dial it back because I don't know what's going on with him. And so when the other kids, I took the other kids to enrichment and I kept him. And I asked him, you know, what was going on? I said, I noticed that you're just angry all the time. And he's like, yeah, I know. And this was third grade too. And he was like, yeah, I know. And I said, well, what's going on? He said, I'm just mad. I'm just angry. And I'm like, why? Come to find out, his mother had gotten this boyfriend who was physically harming her every night, who had pulled a gun on him, on her, and he's in the front of his mother trying to protect her to not get shot. This is what we're dealing with, these babies, you know? And we're not therapists. We've learned to kind of, you know, and we have like VYJ, which do well with talking to us about how to handle certain situations and how to deal with kids, which has been wonderful, but that's not our background. We have to learn so many professions. What do you do when a kid is bleeding? What do you do when, but yeah, we have so many kids that, you know, have been abused, you know, by a parent physically, you know, in other ways as well. And we've had that before a lot. And so, you know, I still just having people to come in maybe that can bring something more than what we're able to supply to help the children to deal with life. Because some of them, you know, I'm not going to college. I'm just trying to survive. I'm just trying to get to high school, move out the house so I can. Well, let's bring some people in for high schoolers that can talk to them about finances, that can talk to them about different jobs. That can, if you want to go to school and you don't think you have a way, let me show you some things that you can do. Let me work with you with that. Bring in the community in to show them how to operate a camera. Who knows what these kids could be? We have so many kids that are doctors that's out there on the streets right now doing absolutely nothing with their life. But ask them about science. I didn't think I could. I didn't think that there was a way. We do need to do better with that, I think, with linking with the community.
Yeah, no, that all makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah, I know I said a lot and
no, it was jumped great. Around. No, it was great. Is there any, I mean, those were just my set questions. We have all the time in the world. There are other things that you want to share or talk about, please?
I think we kind of hit the main pieces on the head. God bless education in the future. Because I, honest to God, don't know this generation that is moving forward. It makes me nervous because so many of them have, they can't read. They're leaving high school and not being able to read. I mean, you can't even read document. Cursive writing is, for the most part, not even taught. Well, how do you read old documents, you know? I don't know. It's just scary. A lot of them can't do math. I called a florist one day to have something delivered on behalf of my sorority sisters for another one that who's lost a family member. And I told the lady, you know, I want this kind of flower, you know, about maybe 15 inches high. And she laughed and she said, well, I don't know how tall that is. You have a picture? And I said, well, when you think about how tall a ruler is, it's 12 inches, just a little bit higher than that. She's like, oh, that's how you do that. Yeah, or those kids that are working fast food and they cannot count money. They can't count change. Now we have all these babies going out there that can't read. You know, what's going to happen with them? You know, where are they going to end up? And then where am I going to be when they're making decisions for me? You know, that's the scariest part of education to me. Producing all of these babies that are just not getting it, not going to be super productive to society. Many of them will, you know, they'll figure it out and find a way. But yeah, that's scary, the future.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else that?
No, God bless all the teachers. I love them. We work hard, y'all. We work hard. That's it. That's pretty much it. And you know, I'm a unique case. I don't know how much your viewers are able to see, but you know, I've been like the only teacher in Caddo that teaches from a wheelchair, which doesn't stop me. I tell people all the time, once you've been around me for like maybe a few days to a week, you're going to not see the wheelchair. And they're thinking, yeah, right. I cannot not see the wheelchair. And they don't see the wheelchair. It's kind of like I'm holding doors for other people. I'm going to the copier. Anybody need copies? Yeah. Go do this for me. You know, just not even thinking about it. But I live my life like I always have lived my life. I was a victim of drunk driving when I was 17, lots and lots of years ago. And my spine was injured in the lower back. And it broke the spine. Broke or separated, but it bent the cord. So I never lost all sensation or every single thing, just more than I needed and, you know, to do that I would need to walk around. But even in DeSoto Parish, there were no other teachers in wheelchairs, and I just make it work. In my eyesight, it's just normal for me, but people are always telling me, oh, you're so inspirational. I can't believe it. Oh, I want, or a lot of people request their kids be put in my class because they know I'm going to give as much as I have to give to their child. But I just thought it was interesting that there are not really many of us, if any more than me. I've never been at a workshop and seen anybody else in a wheelchair, which is just interesting. I don't know what deters them from it, but yeah.
Well, yeah. You are inspiring, and you are exceptional.
Thank you so much.
Anything else?
No, you know, I just live a very, very busy life. I'm an educator, as you know. I decided to go back into the classroom because I didn't miss the kids. You know, I spend my time doing schoolwork or taking care of my mom, who's older. My father passed away a few years back. I am a co-founder of a lupus organization, so we're always doing a little something with that.
And what is it called?
It's RTF, R. Tammy Fleming Walk to End Lupus.
One more time?
R. Tammy Fleming Walk to End Lupus.
Okay.
Yeah, and we have our walk every May. So if anybody know anybody with lupus, we would love to have you guys come out. It's at Columbia Park, okay. May 18th, and we have a website so they can look on there.
And what is that? But, Do you know what the website is?
It's RTF Walk to End Lupus. RTF Walk to End Lupus.
Okay.
Yeah, .com.
Okay.
Yeah, so, we try to help the community out by educating people about lupus. We do a scholarship every other year, at least $1,000 to help a kid go to college. We reach out to the community, you know, police officers, libraries, things like that, to bring things in for the kids, you know, and other people. We have a few vendors out. We had gotten to a point right before COVID hit where we had about 400 people coming out. And then COVID hit and we had to do like our first virtual one. And so we're starting to try to build that back up. And we kind of partnership a little bit with LSU, their rheumatology department, and work towards that. So I stay busy, but my first love would definitely be education. So I try to give my all to that.
Well, that's clear.
Yeah.
Thanks for being here today.
Thank
I appreciate
you, so
you
much.
And
I appreciate
all you're doing.
That. Yeah, I appreciate that. And thank you, Casey Monero, for recommending me to you. I appreciate that, and you and her.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks.
Absolutely.